This episode is proudly sponsored by The Helix, a new innovation district located in New Brunswick, New Jersey, the heart of the Northeast Corridor. The Helix provides a critical ecosystem for innovation by offering a range of physical environments, a vibrant community of leading innovators, and a strategic central location on the Northeast Corridor. The Helix will uniquely mix workspaces, classrooms, laboratories, venues, and collaborative environments, creating a dynamic community and setting for innovative minds. Universities, startups, Fortune 500 companies, entrepreneurs, researchers, and many others will all call the Helix home. Thus far, the Helix has assembled a community of innovative private and public organizations, such as Rutgers Health, the New Jersey Innovation Hub, RWJ Barnabas Health, Hackensack Meridian Health, universities from Ireland and Israel, and others. The Helix is where ideas will come to life. To learn more, visit helixnj.com.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
From NJ.com and the Star Ledger, welcome to the Rutgers Rant, your one-stop podcast for the Scarlet Knights, with your hosts, Steve Politti, and Rutgers insiders Brian Fonseca and Pat Lenny. Let's start chopping.
All right, welcome back to the Rutgers Rant, everybody. A special March Madness edition of the Rant that includes very little actual March Madness. For us, March Madness, transfer portal, wrestling. All right, but I got to begin here, and this is great. You guys can't see this because we have yet to figure out how to put our podcast onto YouTube like every other major podcast in the world. But right now, I have in front of me, we've got Lanny and Fonseca, both of them were speaking on a Rutgers journalism class today. Make sure if I get this wrong, Rutgers journalism class today. And Pat is wearing, it looks like he went on his like if you were like going on a job interview. Like he's got the white shirt, the blue tie. I mean, looks just like you would hire this man. He would have like under tucked under his arm that portfolio. You know, like, nice to meet you, Rush Chairman. He's got it right there. He's showing me the bag. He's got it right there. The bag. He looks like he spoke to this class. He was casting this image like this when he walked in there. Next generation of student journalists looked up and saw Pat Lanny and said, "Wow, that's the guy. There he is. He's the future." And then he came in with Fonseca, who is wearing, I don't know, I guess if I could really describe it, be like a modern Unabomber look. He's got, you know, I mean, he's unshaven. He's got the gray hoodie. I just don't understand. Like, did you coordinate this? When you walked in there, was there any comment about the fact that one of you looks like you're ready to go to take over corporate America and the other one looks like you just got kicked out of your apartment? I mean, what happened here?
I may look more unprofessional by a wide margin, but I was the one who was early, and Mr. Wall Street over there was 20 minutes late, albeit because he was working and doing an actual job. But
I think that's part of the look, though, right? Pat, you were late on purpose. This is what you're an important person. That's the vibe I'm getting from you by this look.
Pat Lanny only wears ties for like four events, trying to be professional. National Signing Day in football,
right?
And weddings and or unfortunately funerals.
Well, anyway, you both look wonderful in your own special way. I hope tomorrow's journalists got the message across, and you told them to go to biz school, because that's what you should have done. All right, let's talk some. What do you want to talk about first? Basketball portal today. The portal doors opened, and the big news—not a big surprise. Antonio Chole in the portal. Brian, I know you couldn't be sitting there chained to your desk following this today. I've been chained to my desk following it. It's been pretty interesting. What's your sense on day one? Is it going slower than we expected? About what we expected? When's the good stuff going to start?
I've been following. It's been fascinating. Some names you kind of expect, like Doug McDaniel, the star player at Michigan. They fired their coach. Obviously, he's going to look to maybe return home to the DMV. Georgetown feels like a great fit for him. And there are other interesting names that popped in, like a kid like Josh Cohen. He is a center from Massachusetts. It's his second time in the portal in 2 years. And Rutgers recruited him slightly last year when he entered the portal before he ended up at UMass, played at St. Francis, Pennsylvania before that. That's a name that, look, I don't know if Rutgers has contacted him at all. I don't know where they stand in their big man pursuit, but that's a name that I would be interested to see. And you're going to see tons of names like that where you can kind of connect the dots and think, maybe, and you're going to spend the next 45 days thinking that Rutgers is going to fill their 13 spots with 75 different kids. On the Rutgers end, yes, Antonio Chole and two walk-ons, Daniel Vesey and Jacob Morales, both all three of them entered the portal today. No surprises. Antonio Chole's intention kind of leaked on Thursday, and that's been known for a few days now. Anyone who watched 5 seconds of Rutgers basketball this season would know that that was coming. As for the more interesting bits, who knows? We're recording this at 2:18 p.m. on Monday, March 18th. I wouldn't be surprised if there's no news for the rest of the day. I know Steve Peichel started sitting down, having his exit meetings with players one-on-one this morning. I assume he had his with Antonio Chole and the walk-ons, hence why they are in the portal now. Those will come through today, I believe some tomorrow as well. So we might see some stuff kind of trickle in that time. But I would guess that by the end of the week, Rutgers should have a good idea of who is entering and who is staying. And then you can kind of get into the real fun of this, the real meat of it, who is coming in and joining the circus that will be next year.
All right, let's dig onto the who's leaving part, because I have to feel like they must have a pretty good idea at this point. Like, guys like Mawat Mag, I mean, we've talked about it. You asked a great question at the end of the Big Ten tournament, and I got to give you credit for it because it's a hard question. You're in the locker room. Everyone's wondering if he is actually hurt or if he is, they call it quiet quitting. Pat in his suit his dress shirt understands what that means in the corporate business world. If he was actually preserving himself for the portal, which is kind of crazy that we've reached that point, but here we are. Take us through that moment where you ask him this, and he was the one person who didn't give you a clear answer about coming back as well, right?
Yeah, so to be clear, because a lot of people asked me this question, we reported after the Big Ten tournament loss Rutgers had against Maryland in the first round, that Jeremiah Williams, Gavin Griffiths, and Jermichael Davis told me they expect to come back. I asked them, do you expect to be here next year? And all three of them said some version of yes. I did not ask every single player in the locker room if they expect to stay. That's something, because a lot of people were fixated on the names that said yes and not other names. I just didn't have the time. I had to rush over to Steve Peichel's press conference to get some quotes from him as well. You know, I'm the only guy there kind of doing double duty. And it was just, I got my priorities straight, getting those three and talking to Mawat Mag. I didn't even get a chance to talk to Cliff because he was at the podium. And by the time he got back to the locker room, I couldn't get to him. All this is to say that those three guys were the ones that said yes. I didn't ask anybody else, because if I did, I would have their answers in that story. I did ask Mawat Mag if he has made a decision on his future, and he says he hasn't even thought about it. Tough to believe that, but take the kid for what he says. And I asked him the question that everyone is wondering, because this gets tweeted at me every time we tweet out the availability report that Mawat Mag is out. It's been on every message board thread. It's been the most discussed topic at Rutgers for the past month. I asked him, Mawat, there is chatter out there. There is the belief that you are not playing to preserve your body to enter the transfer portal. I guess I'm giving you a chance here, open the floor. I guess, is that true? What do you have to say about that? And he said, that is false. That was his immediate answer, very forceful. That is false. First, he asked me, wait, what are they saying? As though he was surprised. I don't know if he was. And then Gavin Griffiths is sitting this chair over for me in the next locker. And he gets up and he says, I also want to answer this. He's tried to practice multiple times over the last month. If he could play, he would play. He's been hurt. He's not doing any of that. That's not true. And then he sat back down. So this is one player. I don't know if that's the feeling of the entire locker room. I don't know. But Gavin Griffiths was very clearly in defense of Mawat Mag. As for what Mawat Mag's standing, I think it would be a rather large surprise if he came back next year. And I don't think he'll be the only other one. To kind of grab on the thread you were saying, I would be surprised if Cliff Omori's back next year. And then there's the other edge cases, the other 50-50s that could go either way. I'm not quite sure where they stand. Like, Derek Simpson, is he coming back? Which of the two centers? I don't think Antoine Wolfolk and Emmanuel Ogbele could both come back. I think there's a possibility of one coming back. Which one is it? Eileen Ogbele, I don't know that for certain. So I think a lot of these questions will be clarified probably by the end of the week.
Yeah. Pat, from your perspective, just looking at this, and it's interesting because, like, watching that game against Maryland, watching the game against the second half against Ohio State, watching a lot of these games, like, you know, it feels like the entire team checked out. Like, I'm not just looking for better players. I'm looking for like a different chemistry thing too. And like, if Mawat Mag was hurt, then forgive me for saying this. I apologize. Like, okay, you guys hurt, you shouldn't be playing. But you know, aren't there injuries you gut through too? You know what I'm talking about? Like, isn't there some element of that where, you know, you're not out there, you have a chance to play. Pykele's went out of his way to say, this guy practiced, you look good in practice. Like, there's, to me, there's blaring red lights about that one.
Yeah. Like, it definitely, the red flags go up. There's no question about it. I always come back to, well, yeah, he could have gutted it out probably if they were playing for something.
Right.
But at this point, obviously the ultimate goal of the season was long gone. So I think that kind of sorted itself out. But yeah, there's certainly, the flares have gone off on this Milan Mag scenario. I think it was very, very good of Gavin Griffiths to come to his defense, and yeah, even Mawat to just say, to take the floor as and say, no, that's blatantly false. And that was a really good journalism and good for the player as well.
And I do take the three guys you got the S's from. And again, this can change, Brian, but I do really think that certainly Jermichael Davis is going to be back. I would think Gavin Griffith would come back. He doesn't, I get up and down year. There's not a lot of places I think he can land. And if Jeremiah Williams doesn't come back, then wow. That's all I got to say about that one. He certainly will have a starting job, A, and B, Rutgers program rehabilitated his career essentially here at the end. It would just be kind of weird if he didn't. So I'll give you those three. Definitely coming back. That puts us in the same spot that we talked about, needing a big man, a wing of some kind with some leadership, and of course a shooter. So I've been looking at the guys. This is fun. And I know you mentioned this, like you get kind of addicted to, oh, look who's out there. I'm going to throw two names at you, Brian. Completely blue. You don't, this is coming. Two names. Tell me if I'm crazy. Tell me if you think it's possible. Tell me if it's not a good mix. Darling Stone, Dubar, Hofstra, familiar with him. 17.8 points a game, 6.8 rebounds. Big guard, be nice to have him. 40% from three, number one. Amari Williams from Drexel, 12.2 points a game, 7.8 rebounds. Two guys from the area who certainly would be familiar with Rutgers that I'm sure they've scouted and seen. Go ahead.
The first one, I think he fits a lot of what Rutgers needs. He is a sharpshooter, which is priority number one for this team. Mm-hmm. That was one of the first things Steve Pykele said when I asked him what's on the list for next year. A shooter, a shooter, a shooter. I think that is very clearly their biggest need, and he fits that. They have some experience in facing him. I believe he was on last year's team that defeated them in the first round of the NIT. I think he'd be a great get. I don't know if they are at a point where they've talked to him. I don't know.
Right.
But I certainly think he would be a positive get. Can you throw that second name at me? Because I was not listening.
Okay. Be sure honest. Amari Williams, center at Drexel. Big body, 6'10 guy.
Sure.
4.2 points.
Sure. I think, again, a good fit. Fits at the position. He was one of the first guys to say he was intent to enter the portal. I think he's going to have a lot of interest, and I think that's going to be the battle that Rutgers is going to face, in that there's going to be a lot of guys in the portal where you say, ooh, would be a perfect fit. The thing on the other end is there's 70 other teams that think, ooh, perfect fit. And a lot of those teams have a lot more money to offer than Rutgers, right?
And I did break down the Josh Cohen name as well, 15.9, 6.8. Lincroft native.
Now, what's interesting is the kind of profile of big they're going to want to get, right? Are they going to want to stick with Josh Cohen? Is a guy who scores a lot on the inside. He could shoot a little bit from three, not at volume, but he could shoot outside. He's really crafty inside, great rebounder, not a great shot blocker, but he does a lot of the things that a traditional Steve Pykele big does, a very inside presence. Are they going to have any interest in a guy that's like an outside inside center, a guy who can shoot a little bit, who can go out into the perimeter, be more of a off the dribble center and play a little bit, sacrifice a little bit on the defensive end? I think that's going to be very interesting and telling of the kind of way they want to shift their playing style for next year. I do think they want to be a little bit more offensive oriented. Again, it's hard to be any less offensive oriented than they were this year. But I think that where they go with the center position will be very telling for them in that respect. And I think they're going to cast a wide net at the center position. And I think that that's going to be one of the main priorities for them for sure. Josh Cohen, to me, fits like a glove. I think he'll have a lot of suitors. He's a first team A-10 guy. His numbers look great. So yeah, look, if you land any of those three guys, I think those are smashing successes. But I will remind you that A, there's a lot of competition, and B, there are 44 more days of the portal and a lot more kids entering. So if they don't land any of these guys, I think there will be more options available in the coming days.
Right. And it's also a money thing, Pat, right? I mean, that's, we can't forget about the other part of this equation. And then I have no new clarity on like I wrote a column after they lost to Maryland where I thought like I had heard some positive developments. This Vegas tournament, we'll get into that a little later about the schedule. The idea they could get $1 million for playing in November in this what looks just to be a fantastic event out in Las Vegas over Thanksgiving. Let's book it for a million reasons, not less, least of all, me in Las Vegas over Thanksgiving. I've already booked my room. Stay at the Bellagio. It'd be great. That aside, but seriously, look, we don't know. Like that scene, all right, well, then you'd have a lot of money to play with. But I don't know what the coffer looks like. I don't know if they know what the coffer looks like for NIL stuff.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. I'm just listening to all these names, and the analogy that popped into my head is that now Rutgers is the annoying guy in the ice cream line that's like sampling 7 different flavors. Like, oh, the strawberry is good, but I want the Rocky Road. And I'm going to take, can I just have one more sample? And can I do this and that and that? And like, let's slow down a little bit here. Like, go get your ice cream and get the heck out, right? Like, that's what I kept thinking about. And then ultimately, like, let's think about the biggest need, and you hit the nail on the head, and Brian did too, and Peichel did when he did his shooter alarm. So I think the ice cream analogy is they have to get whatever ice cream flavor is the best at shooting three-pointers.
That's excellent. Good point. Now I'm watching this again. This is something else we need the video feed on YouTube. This could be a priority for next year, getting the view. Because right now, if you're watching it, you could watch this live. Gonzaga is clearly on his phone. Scrolling through the transfer portal. You're doing the Schefter thing. You're like texting some agent. I don't know what you're doing. What are you doing? You look like you're looking at Twitter for transfer portal.
I'm doing my job. What do you want?
Okay. You know what Brian's phone is like on 24/7. Right. Just yes. Never stop. Update after update. Twitter notification. Yeah.
This is what I put on. I put it on silent mode at about 9:30, so I go to bed. All right, we'll come back to basketball. We got a lot of questions about it in our questions section, but let's talk wrestling for really quick. Pat, you're getting on a plane here on Wednesday to Kansas City.
Yes. The T-Mobile Center.
T-Mobile Center, KC. Get some barbecue. Pat Mahomes.
That's what I've heard.
Travis Kelce.
Send in your barbecue recommendations.
All right. So you've seen the brackets, you've seen the whole breakdown. What is your expectation level now going into this thing?
It's so fascinating because the only question people want to know, and this is going back to our live pod, when JP asked the question, how many All-Americans is reasonable? And you look at the brackets, and like Rutgers is going to be in the mix and at least 3 weight classes for an All-American. And just to give the overarching, so for non-wrestling fans, you become an All-American when you finish in the top 8 of your weight class. Rutgers has 7 guys that are seated 16th or better. So,
oh, wow.
So if they wrestle to their seed and maybe win a match that they're not supposed to, or as Coach Goodell said on his press conference today, realistically, a lot of Rutgers best success is going to come on the backside of the bracket, which means that they're going to have to win close matches in the wrestle backs after they lose in the championship bracket. That's the path to All-American for this. Like Rutgers may have 1 or 2 guys in the quarterfinals, but they're going to be really scrapping and they're in a really good position based on their seeds to do really well once they do inevitably run into a Penn State guy or a higher seed. So if you want me to give you the number of All-Americans, you're going to have to wait to the end of the pod.
Over under on 3.5. I'm not waiting.
Come on.
2.5.
How did you come up with 3.5?
Well, I don't know. You said 3. What would the number be? 2.5?
All right. 3.5. 3.5 is the perfect line because I really think like 3 is realistic. And that's a like best case scenario.
Is 3 the best ever? What is the best ever?
Great question. I think it's 3. I think it's 3.
Okay.
And certainly the year they had 2 national champions.
Right.
Which is a whole another angle of this is that Dylan Schauver, the Big Ten champ at 133 pounds, is the number 4 seed, has a shot to win it if he wrestles his best. It's a tough weight class, and there are really good guys in the weight, but that's a whole nother spin to this. How good could Rutgers do at this tournament? Well, Dylan Schauber could be a national champion, and that would make whatever else happens kind of a moot point.
Well, I'm hoping he does win the national championship, because then they'd ring that bell for
– yes.
And that was still one of my favorite moments from the Suriano Ashnault, was the bell ringing where they're standing in the hall. And the bell's like behind like a door. Like, it's weird. It's not, you would expect like Liberty Bell, big old thing, but it's like, it's a rope behind like a door. And Goody was standing in the hallway, like holding the rope, like looking back at, can I ring it now? Like, he was really excited about it. And that was like one of my favorite videos from that whole thing, was like, just the look on his face, like, can I ring it now? Can I ring it now? Anyway, so I'm rooting for that. Schauber, you say he's the 4 seed. Does he, so is there a prohibitive favorite in that weight, or is it wide open?
The number one seed is this guy, Dayton Fix from Oklahoma State, who Soriano wrestled famously. The guy's in his, I think, 8th season of
holy crap. That same guy?
That same guy.
That's wild.
So it's unbelievable. He's in there. There's a stud freshman from Lehigh, Ryan Crookham, and then a world champion from Cornell, Vito Arugio, who won the title last year. So those three guys are the top 3 seeds, and people have kind of put them on a next level. And then they say, oh, well, Dylan Schauber, and after that, you're wrestling for 4th. But the way Schauber wrestled at the Big Tens, I wouldn't count him out.
That'd be fun. All right.
Yeah, so it'd be a really fun story.
Yeah. Good stuff to look forward to. All right. Let's do some questions. A bunch of them about what happened in Minneapolis. Fonseca. And this is the one for me that kind of boils it all down. Why did the team even bother to show up for the Big Ten tournament? That's the damn question. Forfeit the game and save money and travel, all the stuff we do the year, endless money, time spent, sacrifice, and that's how it ends. It's BS. Would love a response from your perspective. No, I mean, it's the sentiment that I've gotten out of here. A lot of frustration, and I think it's not the frustration that the team lost, finished poorly. It's just how they finished. Right. It's just not, you're playing a Maryland team that you're even with by all, every, you know, in the standings, certainly you saw they played each other, you know, they each won a one during the season, each one, and you're down 17-3 in like the first minute and a half.
Sure. But I mean, this guy's got to be joking, right? You didn't think they'd actually quit the.
Well, you know, it's the sentiment of it. He's not going to, you know, the frustration.
Mean, sure. I can understand the frustration, but, and look, also the fact that they've lost 6 of the last 7 games in the regular season, and all of them by double digits. They've had a lot of struggles, and it's something I keep going back to. This team just was not very good, and I think they knew they weren't very good. Obviously, the results dictate that. And when you know you're not very good and you get off to a bad start, you figure you have no chance of coming back. So have you guys ever been in, like, you know, a rough work situation, or you're failing a class and there's a month left and you just don't think there's any chance of coming back? You just give up? Or is it just me? I assume that's a similar feeling of just like, what's the point?
Are you not looking at the guy wearing a shirt and tie and the definition of success? Never in my life.
Say, that shirt is perfectly ironed. Do you think a guy who looks like that has ever tasted what you're talking about here? Look at him. Come on.
I think the bottom line is this team just was not that good. And anyone that was thinking of anyone outside of the program that even believed for a second they would make an NC State level run through the Big Ten, win the tournament, and go to the NCAA tournament, which is really the only point of trying in the Big Ten tournament, right, is to win. Who cares if they won one game? I mean, would it really have made a big difference? No, right? Like, I think getting
upset. NC State went and had to win 5 games and won it.
Right, but they were the 10th seed. They were 10th seed. And let me look this up where they were on KenPom. They were North Carolina State.
While he's Googling, like, wouldn't you also want to end the season on a positive note, and not that you mailed it in, to use your quotes?
Yeah, I think that I agree with that too. Like, isn't there some pride? I mean, I just look at guys like, I don't know, like, what does a guy like Geo Baker feel about that? Or guys who've been to this kind of drag this thing up to a point where, you know, Rutgers is known for something. It's not that. I mean, I guess I come back to that. I just didn't see a lot of pride in you know, the uniform and anyway.
That's where the frustration comes from.
Yes.
Because you want to see guys putting their all out effort into this as much as you are as a fan. And when you don't get that reciprocated, it's hurtful, and you feel embarrassed, you know, as a fan, I think.
Yep. Fair enough.
Also, again, there is the element of the Muat Mack situation kind of bringing a cloud over the team, right? Like, say what you will, I think if this team was in contention for the NCAA tournament in the last 2 weeks of the season, I think Muwat Magg might have gutted it out. Again, based on what Steve Peichel said in his pregame radio show, he was very clear. I don't think this was an accident that he says Muwat practiced yesterday and he looked good too, right? These, mm-hmm. He just didn't say these things. I think he's very careful. And I think what he was trying to imply there is very clear. So right. If that is the case, and you're a guy who is playing, and they were gutting out a lot of injuries in other areas, right? Austin Williams had to get his knee drained every Monday. Noah Fernandes didn't play because he had a sprained ankle. Oscar Palmquist was dealing with a back thing for weeks, right? Like all this coming together and you have really nothing to play for. I just think it's hard to blame guys for throwing the towel in, really. Like I come from a different point of view here. I think it's fine. And I think everybody outside of the coaching staff that believe they can make a run, I think everybody from us to most fans had kind of checked out by that point too, right? I just think there's no real foul here from where I sit.
You mentioned Steve Peichel's comments. He was interesting, more interesting in my opinion, after the game than he's been in most of these press conferences where he kind of says platitudes, same thing. You know, my guys, we've got to figure it out. It's on me. He says the same thing. This is the first time I've really ever heard him say something similar to what he said, and which was, and I'm paraphrasing it. I apologize. I don't have the quote in front of me, which is something to the extent of, we've got to get guys who play the way we want to play, essentially. Like, we'll play Rutgers basketball, right? You know what I'm talking about quote-wise?
Yes, I'm pulling it up right now. I asked about what the next 2 weeks look like, and he said figuring out a lot of stuff, figuring out our roster for next year in this day and age, and continue to do the great job we've done in recruiting. So I followed up with anything specific you're looking to add, and he said, and I quote, I mean, obviously we need shooting. We're just going to try to add some talent and some age and, you know, guys that are going to compete the way we want them to compete here at Rutgers.
Right. Yeah. It was kind of a telling comment to me. And I think that's, you know, speaks to a coach who ended the season pretty frustrated. Yeah.
I think he was very frustrated with the way the year went. And I think the comments he's had in the last two press conferences after the Ohio State game and after this game, he's made it very clear that he is, he used the term, I'm on a mission. In his press conference after the Big Ten tournament loss, he made very clear that they're going to be much more, I don't know, harsh is the word, but very strong in positioning in the transfer portal, having talks with guys and getting straight answers right away on what their plans are and being more, I don't know if cutthroat again is the right way to put it, but they're being very intentional with the way they're navigating this offseason, which they have to because they learned a lesson from last year in that you can't let things kind of float along. You got to make strong decisions, immediate decisions, and ultimately, for you to have any success, right decisions.
All right, here's my question along those lines. And this is a question that three different people in our Rutgers Insider had as well. And it's great to be cutthroat with the players and the team and to say, all right, we've got to, you know, and I get it. That's totally correct. Is he going to be cutthroat with himself and his staff and finally do something to upgrade the offensive philosophy? Or is he going to blame it on the fact his players couldn't shoot? And this was the question I had. What are the odds Steve Peichel changes his philosophy on the game and actually cares about scoring? Putting up 60 points next year with this talent would be criminal. And I just wonder if there's going to be any sense beyond, you know, the Jay Young, hey, we bring in a guy we know who can give me a sounding board. Is there going to be any sense you think that they're going to take a long, hard look at the way this team has performed offensively? Not 1 year, not 2 years, but 8 years.
To put it lightly, like that reader question was perfect. It would be criminal to throw your hands up and say, oh, we don't have offense when we have all this talent. There's got, like, Steve Peichel obviously is a good coach. He'll figure it out. I go back to the comments that were coming out in the preseason that this was going to be a fast team and score and run the floor. Why would you say those things if you didn't have that in the back of your mind that you were philosophically going to change, you know, the way you played? So I think maybe he tried and it failed.
To be utter nonsense. Yeah.
It was ridiculous. Maybe this year, obviously no one's going to buy him at his words. He's going to have to show it that these guys are going to be explosive with the ball in their hands and create offense for themselves.
Right. All right. Looking for more questions. Do you have some, Brian? Go ahead. Do you want to say it?
Yes. I think that the style of offense they run has never fit a team better than they will next year. And they have two guys who are elite shot creators themselves in Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey. They don't need a bunch of motion and screens. And while those things are all well and good, those guys can get a bucket by themselves. Those were the type of players that had success in this team with Geo Baker and Ron Harper Jr. And I think those two guys are very capable in doing that. I don't expect a wide-ranging change of offensive philosophy. I don't think this offensive coordinator that everyone read that one article in Sports Illustrated about Purdue and how everyone wants an offensive coordinator on the staff because of that. I don't expect that to happen. I'm sorry.
Nobody's read Sports Illustrated for like 20 years. Come on.
In fairness, Kevin Sweeney is a good writer, and he's one of the very few good things about that publication nowadays. Anyway.
I kid. I love Sports Illustrated. It's just a joke. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Just got to throw that caveat in there in case Sports Illustrated offers you all $1 million a year for their...
exactly.
Anyway, I don't expect it. I think there will be a little less emphasis on defense and more on offense. I just think naturally you have to, right? But I think if they are better offensively the next year, which I think they will be, it'll be more about the personnel they have and not because they're running some intricate UConn style offense, BYU, where there's cuts and 3-point shooting and you know, just all
I
this.
I don't know, man. I hear you. I sat there and I was courtside for the Seton Hall, for the Seton Hall Big East tournament basketball game. And I got to watch UConn, and it is just a thing of freaking beauty. And I get it. They've got better players. Understand that completely. But when you watch them play offensively, you're like, holy cow, that's it. That's it. It's like every shot's a 3-pointer or a dunk that the ball moves until there's a good shot. I mean, you're watching, you're like, wow. It's just like a light bulb goes off. Like,
yes,
just it's a little bit of that.
It's possible to do that in the sport. Now consider this. Rutgers had one guy, I think. None of the 10 possible returners, maybe one of the seniors, that shot better than 30% on threes. You could shoot 1,000 threes a game, but if you're shooting 30%, it doesn't matter. And then they have a center who is one of the worst finishers at the rim in the country. So you can make every shot a 3-pointer or a dunk, but when you're shooting awful numbers at them, it's not as valuable. And to run that intricate, beautiful thing of beauty offense, you need good players to execute.
I know.
Cam Spencer was maybe, if not the best, a top three player for Rutgers in the past 20 years, right? He is UConn's third best player. He is UConn's third best player. They have better players than Cam Spencer. Okay. That helps. He's their third best. Think about that. Maybe fourth, right? Their third or fourth best player is an all Big East player. Think about that. Okay.
Good just point.
Rutgers will have some benefit in there because they're getting an elite talent at guard in Dylan Harper and an elite shot maker in Ace Bailey. That will help. And I just want to make sure that when those guys are knocking down shots in isolation, we're not going to start saying, wow, Steve Peichel really revamped his offense this season. I think it's just because they have better players. That comes down to most of the issues here.
This is a button. I love pushing this button. Every time it gets him wound up, I love it. I love it. That's this is really my favorite good. One, Pat. This is really good one. This is really good.
I was going to say, like, someone call RUPD because the Unabomber's loose on campus.
Experience the Heldrich Hotel, a luxury hotel that's perfect for both the business and leisure traveler. Ideally located within minutes of Rutgers University, the Heldrich is convenient to all the action and activities at SHI Stadium, Jersey Mike's Arena, and the Rutgers University campus. The moment you walk through the doors of the Heldrich Hotel and Conference Center, you know you're someplace different. A place with an independent spirit and a boutique vibe. A place where you can immerse yourself in your meeting or event as easily as you can the local culture. Located in the heart of the city, the Heldrich lets you experience all that New Brunswick has to offer. Whether you're coming to New Brunswick for a fun weekend with friends, in town for a Scarlet Knights game, or attending a business meeting, book your accommodations today at theheldrich.com.
I don't want to like set off any alarms here.
I didn't even mention this. You guys are in the Daily Targum's office right now on campus, which they have like a nicer, recording studio than we do apparently with like they've got these professional mics and this is great, man. You look like dressed like this, you look like you could be the young adult, like what's the general manager of the Daily Target.
Yes.
That everyone looks up to him. It's like the cool guy who's, you know, still young enough to relate to the kids but also like a leader of men. And Ryan looks like the guy who comes in at night and does the recycling.
Scrolling his phone as he does it.
I do want to say two things.
Boy, okay.
The Unabomber, for all his faults, was a very smart man.
No, you can't. I don't know. No.
For all his faults, for all the things he did, he was a genius. So thank you for calling me very smart, because I know that's what you're trying to get at, okay? I'm handsome and very smart. Second of all, Thank you to Ben, the videographer at the Targum. We knocked on the door because we saw him in the office. It was my, I knew that the office was here. I've been here recording a podcast in this very studio in the past. And I thought, pretty convenient place to record a podcast. We saw him in the window. We knocked, talked to his boss. They said, oh, Brian Fonseca and Pat Lanny of the Rutgers Rant podcast, please do come in here.
They didn't. Is that what they said?
They did not say that. They said, okay. Yeah, you guys can come in. It's fine. And, but thank you to Ben for doing so. And yes, this is hopefully this is the best sounding podcast we've ever had.
Excellent. Unabomber, too soon. Okay, a couple more. Ooh, reaction to Seton Hall not getting the NCAAs. That's a good question someone had. And the second part, if you want to address this as well, how do you feel about teams who declined an NIT bid? Seton Hall did not decline an NIT bid. They will host St. Joe's at Walsh Gymnasium. I thought Seton Hall was going to, I really thought they were going to get in, like very confident they're going to get in after that game. I think they just got washed away by just a crazy, crazy day in college basketball. No other way to put it. I mean, I didn't, by the end of the day, after NC State won, and certainly after Oregon won, I'm like, well, forget it. They're not getting in. And I do like the fact that, because I believed it, I do like the fact that they were further on the first four list than St. John's were. And I think that Seton Hall had a better resume than St. John's. I think beating UConn should count for something, but it was a numbers game, you know?
Breaking news on the pod, Derek Simpson's in the transfer portal.
Whoa! Live on the podcast. This is that. Wow. Does this just happen right now? That's a huge one.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Rapid reaction. What did he have anything on the, did he tweet anything?
No, it's been, he's in the portal.
He's in the portal. Okay. But so it's, that's, this is not like him announcing it. This is, you're getting this news.
Yes.
Right. All right. Okay. Let's let Brian get to work and I'll give you my two cents on Seton Hall in the meantime. I totally agree with you. They had a better resume than St. John's. Beat them 2 out of 3 times. No question there. Better results against Quad One. I just thought, like, all the bid stealers, you're right, definitely took away. But then schools like Virginia and Michigan State got in, and I thought Seton Hall had a better resume than both of them. And I can understand why Hall fans are upset.
And Virginia had.
And the bigger picture, that the Big East, which rated it out as like the number two conference according to all the advanced analytics, only got 3 teams. I get that they're high seeds and all, but that just of course there's DePaul in that conference, but it devalues the middle of the league. And I think that the way Dan Hurley spoke about it and Shaheen Holloway spoke about it was very poignant and accurate, that there was a lack of disrespect for the conference as a whole. And I thought the Big East commissioner for not going to bat for his teams kind of that rubbed me the wrong way. I felt like
my problem,
in this era, you gotta go to bat for your teams and schools.
Looking at the metrics, Virginia had better numbers, I guess, if you combine all. This is going to Brad, our resident New Jersey bracketologist. But what I don't understand is, like, you get Michigan State. But, okay, well, so what metrics are you using? Because Michigan State's didn't have great road wins, didn't have really great anything. So I was confused in that level. That said, there was nothing that jumped out to me as like, holy cow, what a criminal act of, malfeasance here by the selection committee. I will say that.
You've covered them both pretty closely the last 2 years. So I'll ask you, what was the bigger snub, Rutgers last year or Seton Hall this year?
I would probably say Rutgers last year. Yeah, it was. And that was because nothing happened down the stretch. I thought they were going to get in. But that said, I wrote it at the time, you just can't, you have that Minnesota loss in the last game and you're just asking for it. And I think Seton Hall, to a lesser degree, like, you put it in the committee's hand with some bad losses down the stretch. I get it. I'm not supposed to consider that, but I think that's what happens too. So I think that was part of it for the committee, that they just kind of saw what Rutgers looked like without Moat Mag late in the season. And that's kind of made it easy for them. But given the two, it's a good point. I think Rutgers would be a bigger snub.
Give me one more question.
Are you ready? No?
He's not ready.
All right. Well, answer the NIT question then. So St. John's turns down the NIT. Oklahoma turns down the NIT.
I think Rutgers... it's an embarrassment. Wow. An embarrassment by St. John's for turning down the NIT.
Really?
I really do. You want to prove that you were an NCAA tournament snub? Go out and freaking win the NIT. I don't want to hear, we'll be behind in player acquisitions. And I don't buy it at all. We talked about playing for pride 5 minutes ago and playing for the school on your chest and the fans and things like that. And then you're going to turn down a chance to put seats in, you know, butts in the seat and put your name out there and prove the committee was wrong, I think that's very disrespectful.
I feel like teams have been doing this forever, though. Like, I remember, like, Georgia Tech did this in, like, 1994, and it was a big deal, and I was covering the ACC. It's like, I don't know that this is anything new. I think the one thing that's changed about this for me is that the fact that, I mean, it is just certifiably nuts that the portal opens today. And I understand why it does. I get it. Like, it's, but still, it's just bizarre that this is going on while people are filling out their brackets.
Teams are playing, and their players are putting their names in the portal. That is crazy.
It is nuts. The whole sport is nuts. I don't think that's a real excuse for Rick Pitino not playing. I mean, come on, you've got like 800 analysts. You don't need someone to you know, like Rick Pitino's not the one studying film of these guys entering the portal. It's silly. That part is silly to me. But if the team is not engaged in playing in it, then you should probably turn it down. That's the other side of the coin. Like, if you know your team, like Rutgers right now, if they somehow got an invitation to this thing, they should be like, no, thanks. We're gonna hit the road on that one. I kind of understand that point of it.
I agree. He's still typing.
Are you filing the story? Yes, is that what you're doing?
He's filing the story.
Wait, are you actually alive?
This is going to be on NJ.com.
Before the end of this recording?
Not even by the end of this recording, by the time he's ready to answer his next question. Wait. Yep, he's got the thumbs up. He's ready. Let's go, bring him in.
It's posted? Wow.
Story is posted. You think I'm not ready for this situation? Come on, man. I will say that in our projections of who's staying, who's going, I had Derek Simpson going. So,
yes. And do you think that this was a mutual decision, Brian, that both parties are ready to move on?
I think the situation was set in the way that Derek Simpson struggled mightily as a starter. He was put in an unfair position because he was expected to have some time to play backup to Paul Mulcahy and Cam Spencer and develop and have more experience at the college level this season. Then those two guys bolted at the last hour, and Derek Simpson suddenly was playing with added responsibilities. Derek Simpson struggled mightily. He had the lowest effective field goal percentage of any player in high major basketball with a usage rate of at least 20%. To make that in simple terms, of all the players who played a prominent role in high major basketball, Derek Simpson had the worst shooting conversion rate of any of those players. He struggled mightily. And in fairness, Jermichael Davis, his backcourt mate, was, if not the second, one of the top five worst as well. So shooting obviously is something that must be fixed through the portal. And I think you got to add a guard for depth in Derek Simpson's place. I think it was always going to be between Derek Simpson or Jermichael Davis who was going to stay, because you couldn't have two struggling offensive guards in the back end of your rotation. It just didn't make any sense. So Jermichael Davis will be probably the defensive option off of the bench, similar to a Jalen Miller they used to have back in the day, and he'll have some less offensive responsibilities, I would reckon. So Rutgers must go into the portal and find a backup guard who can play, you know, 10, 15 minutes and could hold his own offensively. Could be a shot creator, could be some form of a point guard. I'm not sure, but they definitely do need some more depth at guard. I think this is a positive move for Derek, truthfully, because his only option to stay next year would be to take a significantly lower role, play again 10 to 15 minutes, and probably have to take much less shots. I think you can go down to a more appropriate level, maybe a mid-tier A-10 team, maybe a low-major team in the NEC and the MAC, wherever, where you can be the guy. His father, Ron, played at Rider, is a Rider Hall of Famer. Derek Simpson at Rider is a guy who could play 25, 30 minutes and have that prominent role. I just don't know if he was at the level where he could do so at the Big Ten. So
that's a big step down. I mean, but anyway, yeah.
That was just me pulling it out of my brain. Right. I think that this situation, this decision is mutually beneficial. And while it is a mild surprise, I think it was kind of always headed in this direction. Once both parties sat down and hammered out the situation, it just made sense.
Yeah. And this is something else that signals that the idea that, you know, the quote unquote developmental program, well, that works. That's a great philosophy, and Steve Peichel is known for that, and that's how he built Rutgers. But the game's changed. Like, we're not seeing. In some cases, you're just not going to have that opportunity to take a step back. Let's bring this guy in. It's just not working that way anymore. And this is to me the biggest example of that. That you got this, college basketball is different.
This season was a product of the developmental program crashing. Right, you developed the guy Paul Mulcahy. He walks out the door. You give Cam Spencer this great opportunity, stepping stone. He goes out the door. Cliff Amore, a guy that you developed, played for 4 years, regressed. So all of those things came together. And that idea that of development, this feels like a Shiano lecture. It really crashed and burned. And you're absolutely right, especially in a sport where you need five guys. The idea of developing and waiting and being patient just doesn't exist, especially when you have 1 year to make it work with Ace and Dalen Harper.
The thing about being a developmental program in basketball is that if you're going to do that, it has to be one, maybe two guys of this level, where that if they don't pull through and grow to the level you think, you could afford that risk. You can't build an entire team off of developmental guys, because they're more likely than not to not pull through and not develop to the level you think. And then you're left with a perfect storm this year where a lot of those type of guys, Derek Simpson, Antoine Wolfolk, guys that you took a flyer on and you hoped would develop better than the recruiting ranking, and they ended up playing about at the level that they were projected at. Sometimes the recruiting industrial complex gets it right. And unfortunately for Rutgers, in this case, they got it right with Derek Simpson, who's a good player, but to this point has not shown that he's a Big Ten player.
All right, Pat, I'm going to give you one wrestling question and let Brian kind of wipe the sweat off his brow here after this breaking news during the pod. This is from JP, of course, who asked this question at our live pod. Similar to this, he wants to know, revisiting my over-under of five All-Americans, what do you think? And I'm putting Braden Davis on upset alert. Dean Peterson is peaking, and that will be the highlight match of Thursday in a 125 bracket that five guys can win. Dean Peterson over Braden Davis.
For context, JP is like spot on with this analysis, I think. For context, Dean Peterson is the 15th or 16th seed at 125 pounds. Braden Davis is a Penn State guy who won the Big Ten as a true freshman, but Peterson wrestled them really tough. And so if Peterson gets out of the first round where he's wrestling another New Jersey State champion that actually beat him in high school, Brett Unger of Cornell, if he beats him in what is going to be a fascinating match, he'll most likely get Davis in the second round. That if he pulled off that upset, it would already thrust Rutgers into like, all right, we're already in miracle mode and we're 10 minutes into the tournament. Certainly, I think that's a great call there. The five All-Americans, I think, would be a dream scenario. Absolutely. I'm putting the over-under. I think you nailed it as 3.5. And if it goes over 3.5, it's like one of the most successful postseasons in Rutgers history. And if it's two, it's a pretty good season, and anything less than that is a poor performance. So Goodale wouldn't put any number on all of all Americans today in his press conference when asked about his expectations. But, you know, there are eight guys going for Rutgers. The last one, Mike Chetta at 149, got an at-large bid. He's the 32nd seed out of 33. He's probably the one guy that really is not going to be in the running for an All-American spot. Let's be honest. Let's be realistic. He's had a great season. He can certainly win a match or two at this tournament. There's no doubt. But the other guys, the other seven, realistically, if they wrestle well and do what they're supposed to do, they're going to be in the mix. And that will be the biggest indication of, has Scott Goodale done a great job recently, or are people really, were they right in questioning his job here? So I think this is a really fascinating tournament to watch, and it's going to be, I'm really glad I'm going, because I tend to think that this is going to be a really good showing for Rutgers following that momentum from the Big Tens.
All right, a couple more things. I love this question. I asked on Twitter for questions about, on our Twitter feed, Sally, our social media director, sent me this question. You guys trained as journalists from college, internships, et cetera, et cetera. How did you train to do podcasts? Just cracked me up. Take me through your training process for this show.
Remember those days you used to come to the Door Feature Service office and do live videos? Where you'd stand there and Matt Stanmeyer and a couple other guys would be the host. And then they'd have the high school reporter kind of like answer questions about his or her sport.
Yeah.
That was my biggest.
That was your training?
That was my training. And other than that, I have zero training.
Zero training. Yeah. I think one thing I did like radio interviews earlier in my career for, when I covered Duke, and I used to do these, like just local radio stations in Durham. And I was not a lot. And I just kind of, I think you learned how, a little bit how to like talk about the team you're covering and, you know, the realization that you don't have to answer the question that people ask. That was like the biggest thing I ever realized doing these things. And now I write down the script. So I have complete control about what we're talking about on the podcast. But when you're doing an interview, like for, it's always good. Like someone like say, well, the Duke offense really looks like it's struggling. Yeah, the offense does struggle, but the defense, you can like really, that's like a good lesson for young journalists to just change the subject. No one really asks. Have politicians do it. Why can't you? All right. I want to do two things. The what else segment, but first predictions. This is March Madness. I want to know who's in your Final Four. I want you to give me a Cinderella. Right. Yeah. I mean, you guys have no time to do this, but I don't care. Put you on the spot.
All right. I don't have a deep Cinderella, but I do have Creighton going to the Final Four.
Oh, that's
I think they're
one.
A three seed.
It's a good one.
I think that's realistic. I have Illinois beating UConn.
You have Illinois beating UConn. Wow. Okay. That's
just
a big
upset.
For Illinois is not getting anywhere near UConn. Okay.
I just want to put something out there that's a little different. And
okay.
Everyone's going to pick UConn. They look like the favorite. Yes. They should absolutely be the favorite.
Yep.
But if there's any team that I think, if you look at how Illinois played in the Big Ten tournament, with Terrence Shannon and being a guy that can just go out there and dominate with the ball in his hands, I think that sometimes those single gut, like that gutted out single effort can perform at a high level in March. So that's why there's a little slight potential that Illinois can get it done. So that's my crazy moment. Gotcha.
So who are your Final Four then?
Illinois, North Carolina, mm-hmm. Houston, mm-hmm. and Creighton.
I'll take it. As a North Carolina grad, that sounds just great. All right, Brian, who's your Final Four? What do you got?
He's just buttering you up, this guy.
Take a little Illinois in the Final Four.
So I have two Cinderella candidates that are both in the same region. And I don't know if they'd count as Cinderellas because they're single-digit seeds, but I don't care. I got either BYU, because I love their offense. They run a beautiful offense. They shoot a lot of threes. And if they can get hot, mm-hmm. they can beat anybody. Or Washington State, who has an omega underrated coach in Kyle Smith. I think either of those teams could make a deep run and upset UConn. I know UConn is the darling, the best team in college basketball probably, and the favorite, but I just can't imagine in this day and age a team running it back 2 years in a row and winning. I'm sorry, Cam Spencer, you're not going to win a trophy. I should say a national championship trophy. So I'll have, I guess for the sake of this argument, I will have BYU coming out of the East. I will have...
BYU coming out of the East, okay.
Well, they're going to beat UConn. Wow. They're going to make it to the Final Four.
Gotcha.
They're going to be my Cinderella. They got to go to the Final Four, no?
Okay, sure.
The South is hard. I want to choose Houston, but Houston just doesn't seem to have enough firepower for me. I'm going to go with another young team, Kentucky. Kentucky out of the South.
Yeah.
This is Cal's redemption arc. He's going to take DJ Wagner and Aaron Bradshaw, those Jersey boys, to the Final Four. In the Midwest, I have my national championship pick. Probably the second most popular national championship pick there is. The guy everyone doubts. Purdue and Zach Edey, the national champions. It's their year, folks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is their year. They have one of the best point guards in the country. They have an arsenal of three-point shooters. They have an elite all-ball, on-ball defender in Lance Jones. And they have the best freaking player in the country in Zach Edey. They're going to run through this tournament the way UConn ran through it last year. Purdue,
really?
No, not even a scare. Not even a scare. And you know what? I'm not even sweating saying this. I am not even worried remotely, which means everybody, whatever you do, do not bet on Purdue to win this tournament because it's not going to happen. I am so confident. Boiler up, baby. And then out of the other region, North Carolina is not going to win it. They are overrated. I will go with, let's go with Dayton. How about Dayton?
Dayton? You know,
just Dayton. Who cares? Dayton. I want to pick. They're seven.
Dayton versus okay, that's interesting. Dayton versus BYU. Someone should bet that because they get good odds on that one in the Final Four. Ooh,
didn't we have FAU versus San Diego State last year?
We did. This is why it's great. It's perfect. If it happens, it's a great pick. Okay.
This is the beauty of the NIL transfer portal era. Dan Wetzel says this all the time on his podcast, and he's right. What people thought that this would consolidate all the power to the big money teams and make college sports even more anti-competitive, this has opened up the chance for all these smaller teams to get players and keep top players and make deep runs. So I think that trend will continue. And if you'll let me have the floor a little bit longer, I do want to chime in on the NIT discussion you guys had while I was working and getting the Derek Simpson story out here. I think St. John's is doing the right thing by skipping the NIT. Because here's the truth. Nobody cares about the NIT. Nobody. The only reason people care about the NIT is because the teams in there didn't make the NCAA tournament. I don't believe anybody's actually watching the NIT once it actually happens. If St. John's won the NIT, what would that mean to them? I mean, I'm seriously, what would that mean? Nothing.
Nothing really.
Now, if you get talented players out of the portal because you got a head start, that would mean a lot for next season, right? So maybe you win the NIT, maybe you hang up a banner, but when your team is 14-16 next winter because you took forever to start going into the portal, the NIT isn't going to be as valuable for St. John's. So I don't blame them. I think they make the right tactical choice. It's sad for the NIT. Historic competition for a long time. It was a beautiful thing. Those days are over.
Fair. I don't disagree. I'm glad I'm not covering. Okay. I don't have, the only big decision I had in filling out my bracket was trying to decide which of Utah State or TCU was going to knock out Purdue in the second round. It was like a big decision for me. I went with TCU. I hope I got the right one. I just feel like that's going to happen. I'm going to give you my one Cinderella. I think after years of not making the Final Four as like a number one seed, wouldn't it be pretty funny if like Gonzaga all of a sudden, like wouldn't it be pretty funny like this year where nobody thinks even a moment about them if they made the final or Elite Eight this year? Because that to me, that'd be kind of interesting, right? Because Gonzaga made the Final Four. Am I getting that wrong?
Gonzaga lost the national championship during the COVID year.
They did lose the national championship.
They got
that's right. They got obliterated by, okay. Right.
So they were only Drew Timmy's.
That's right. That's
third
right.
Third of seven.
All right. So it's not as funny as that. But still, I think that's the team I could see them going to the Elite Eight. I've got Tennessee in my Final Four.
Oh, my God.
Yep, but aren't
they playing St. Peter's?
They are. I'm always wrong. Since I'm always wrong, this is good news this is great news for St. Peter's because this is an opportunity if I'm picking them. I always pick Duke because, again, I'm always wrong. So it's like, yes, just get them in the Final Four. So then they lose in the first round. It's like, it was worth it. I'm going to go with Arizona for obvious reasons because I cannot certainly pick the Tar Heels to get to the Final Four, and Connecticut. Because Connecticut is by far, far and away the best team and will win every game by double digits. So those are my predictions, national championship. I'll take the easy one in Connecticut. All right, let's move on. We've talked for a long time. It's been a fun podcast, news breaking podcast. What else is going on? Lacrosse lost, baseball won a game like 27-13 over Delaware. I saw that score. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Someone complaining about the women's lacrosse team and saying that men's golf is really good. I don't know. Anybody got anything?
I will add that we didn't talk on our last podcast that the women's track and field team had a really good finish and its highest finish ever at the NCAA's top 25 program that's on the rise. So,
oh, wow. Great.
We should have given them a shout out on the last pod. We are doing it now. Great season. Rutgers track and field's in good hands.
Excellent.
So what I do want to bring up is something that we forgot to bring up on the last podcast and in this podcast. I'm pretty sure, unless I missed it in my Derek Simpson news breaking haze, the non-conference schedule for next year and the potential for the Las Vegas NIL jackpot tournament that they could potentially be in, that they're in talks with. That tournament in specific and also just non-conference schedule philosophy, I think is pretty important. It won't be resolved for at least a month or two until they figure out the transfer portal stuff. That's later on. But I do think if they get into this tournament, it's one, it'll help mightily with the transfer portal because they'll have a little bit more NIL funds. Or I should say, it'll be an attractive thing to sell to the kids on the team that they'll make NIL money just for participating in this tournament. And more importantly, it'll put them against elite teams and potentially set up a Rutgers-Duke matchup that everyone wants. I am dying to see Ace Bailey against Cooper Flagg, Dylan Harper against the other talented Duke commits. I think that would be awesome for college basketball.
What is holding that back? Why have we not announced that? That's the question. Any idea?
They are figuring out logistics of TV broadcasting. They got to clear it through all the conferences. They have to probably figure out like the legal stuff of all this, right? Like, so the taxing stuff, maybe. I don't know. There's a lot of details that have to be figured out on the back end. I do think getting the okay from the conferences is a big thing, and figuring out the logistics. And also, it's an 8-team field, and the reporting, there was 11 teams they're talking to, so they're going to have to dwindle the field too, right? So all of that kind of, the logistics have to be figured out.
I will say, I heard from a couple of people that they definitely want Rutgers of that list for the obvious reasons, and I think part of that is that Duke matchup you made, but also the star power. But now, yeah, I think you're right. It's in the conference's hands to get that done. Got to be done soon. So that would be huge. And that's exactly what this program, the boost this program needs. And it's a challenge, though. I will say, opening that season, not opening it, but starting the season pretty early on with a test like that would be fantastic. And but also just the massive challenge for Steve Peichel. Man, you can start 0-3 pretty quickly.
Right. And I think it's valuable, one, for the resume, two, to prepare them for March, which you inevitably hope this team makes comfortably, right? If Rutgers is sweating on Selection Sunday, we've said this multiple times, it'll be a pretty big indictment on how the season went. I've given this some thought in the past week, too. I'm curious to hear your guys' thoughts. Scheduling quality teams, getting to these tournaments, obviously, it would be really good for the program. The games around them, right? You can't play 13 non-conference games against elite competition. Should they, logistically, for their resume, schedule 7 horrible quad four teams, you know, like Stonehill and, you know, like those low level teams, or should they get higher level teams like the Yales and Princetons and teams that won't necessarily help your resume, but if you lose to them, it won't be the end of the world like it would if you lost to Stonehill at home, for example?
That's a great question. And this, I think it's an open-ended debate right now, right? I mean, that's what people, I mean, you listen to Jim Boeheim, you listen to some people who think that who the Providence coach was going off on this about scheduling stuff. But do the metrics support that? That's my question. Do, like, you know, I guess the fact that, you know, you have a high net is not necessarily a ticket to get in. So
the feeling that a lot of coaches have expressed is that there are so many analytical tools here between the net, KenPom, RPI, KPI, strength of record, strength of schedule, non-conference strength of schedule, so many factors here that the tournament committee could essentially pick the teams they want and decide what metrics matter that year to fit the narrative. Virginia should not have been in the tournament. They stink. Almost all their games that they lost were by double digits. They have 2 quad one wins. Why are they in the tournament? What metric could they possibly have used to justify that? Obviously, they found one, because otherwise it doesn't make sense why a team with 3 less quad one wins than Seton Hall in roughly the same amount of opportunities is in the tournament. It makes no sense to me. And I think that's the truth for a lot of college coaches, that they're confused on what exactly they need to do to get into the tournament. And I think the NCAA could do a lot better job of expressing that to coaches and media and fans. But again, I think the issue is that I'm not sure they know what is the most important criteria until they get in the room and decide, I think we should get Virginia in the field because this year, strength of record is the flavor of the month. So it's much like everything else in college sports. It's a complete mess.
All right. So you go to Kansas City. We'll come back and talk that. We'll come back on Monday and we'll have some idea of what's going on in the portal. It's happening as we're recording. Who knows? We got to log off before someone else gets in there at this point. Thanks for listening. It was a crazy podcast. Lanny, loosen your tie. Uni B, go back to your lab and don't send anything through the postal service. That would get us in trouble. Everyone, thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Rutgers Rant. To participate in the conversation and receive live updates about the Scarlet Knights directly to your phone, sign up at nj.com/insider.